Bumblebees have become something like rock stars in the animal kingdom. The sharp losses in bee populations, sometimes by human means, have alerted people to the importance of bees in general and the vulnerability of bumblebees in particular. So a handful of organizations are joining together to create a bumblebee atlas for Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. The Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation is one of the organizations. It is based in Portland. Rich Hatfield is the senior endangered species conservation biologist and the bumblebee lead at Xerces and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Rich.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today on the Exchange. So you're about more than bees at Xerces. We did mention it is called the Society for Invertebrate Conservation. So tell us about the overall mission, if you would.
Yeah, we're an animal conservation organization that focuses on invertebrates. Mostly what we do is focus on habitat creation and habitat protection with the idea that this will help support the invertebrates that help support the rest of life on the planet. Yeah, so we work on everything from freshwater mussels to pollinators, including bees and butterflies, and also, you know, other sort of less charismatic mollusks like jumping slugs and other animals like that, snails, etc.
The charisma helps, though, doesn't it? Isn't that one of the things that the bees have going in their favor?
It does, yeah. Charisma definitely helps people get past that. I mean, we often get the question, you know, why are you saving the slimy, stingy things in our lives? And yes, the charisma definitely helps get past that first barrier. But it's important for people to realize that invertebrates are really essential for our lives and make up, you know, well over 80% of the biodiversity on the planet.
Well, obviously, they all have roles in some niche in the ecosystem. I just wonder if bees have a somewhat larger role, A, and B, if they are taking things a little harder than some of the other invertebrates out there.
Yeah, they certainly are. They're what we would consider a keystone species in that they're contributing to the environment, you know, more than you might expect due to their size or abundance on the landscape. And, you know, that pollination piece of contributing to the food that helps to feed, you know, the people on the planet as well as the majority of wildlife, you know, everything from songbirds to grizzly bears eats fruits, nuts, seeds, and berries, and all of those things. You know, we wouldn't have without pollinators. So there's no question that pollinators are contributing well beyond what we might expect just by looking at them. And they have that on many of the other invertebrates out there. Although, you know, a lot of invertebrates have incredibly important functions in their given ecosystems. You know, freshwater mussels help filter streams and clean water. And, you know, we could go on and on.
So to the other part of the question, though, are bees taking a little harder than some of the other invertebrates, or is it just that because they're so important, because they are a keystone species, we notice their fate a little more?
Yeah, I think it's probably that a little bit more. There are so many species of invertebrates that it's hard to have a clear handle on what's going on with all of them. But because bees are so important, you know, they've sort of been in the forefront. And so there's a lot of people doing research on them and a lot of people studying their conservation. And so we have a decent picture of what's going on with the bees. But we're seeing similar declines in lots of other insects as well. Certainly butterflies and moths and freshwater mussels. You know, we're seeing declines in almost any group of taxa that we're looking at. But they certainly are prominent and very important in pollinators and bees.
Rich Hatfield, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the senior endangered species conservation biologist at the Xerces Society in Portland, where he's also the bumblebee lead. And we're talking about the creation of a bumblebee atlas involving citizen scientists in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. You can join the conversation on the Exchange with questions about bumblebees and their fate. 800-838-3760. Comments welcome as well. jx@jeffnet.org. Is the basic difference between honeybees and bumblebees just that you don't get honey from a bumblebee?
Well, there's more differences than that. that certainly is a major difference. Bumblebees don't create honey. And the reason that honeybees create honey is that gives them something to eat during the wintertime. And bumblebees have a different strategy in that instead of overwintering by eating honey, they actually hibernate. And so bumblebees have an annual life cycle as opposed to a perennial life cycle. Another major difference that a lot of people aren't aware of is that honeybees are actually not native to the United States. They were introduced to North America in the 1600s by Europeans for candle wax and for honey. And so, you know, but bumblebees are native. We have close to 50 native species of bumblebees here in North America, and, you know, 25 or 26 in Oregon.
And so let's talk about the creation of the Bumblebee Atlas. This is a chance to really figure out where they are, and I imagine there are a lot of holes in the knowledge, given the fact that, for example, with Franklin's bumblebee down in southern Oregon, it's been about a dozen years since anybody's seen one of those.
Correct. Yeah, it's been a dozen years, despite pretty comprehensive searches for that species. But yeah, on a broader picture across the Northwest, we have a pretty good coarse idea of where bumblebees are thriving. But if you really look a little deeper at the maps that we have of bumblebee observations, they tend to follow sort of population density maps. So we have the most information where we have the most people, because there's more people looking there in those places. And so part of the idea of the Atlas is to encourage people to get outside of those urban and suburban and rural centers and roadsides, and get them off into more more remote areas, so that we can also find out, you know, where bumblebees are thriving or not so much on the broader landscape, and also learn, you know, what plants they're using and what habitats they're associated with. A lot of that information is actually surprisingly lacking from our knowledge base.
You mean we don't even know the kinds of places they live?
Well, you know, most broadly, bumblebees live anywhere there's flowers. But when we start looking at particular species, you know, we have 25, 26 species here in the Pacific Northwest. And when we start looking at particular species and how to create habitat for them, you know, we have three or four species that are endangered, or, you know, not formally recognized as endangered by the Fish and Wildlife Service, but, you know, that are imperiled and populations have been in decline. And as we look at and think about trying to improve the landscape for them, we want to make evidence-based recommendations for land managers. And if we can learn what plants they're using and what habitats they're associated with, we can make better recommendations. So part of the goal of the Atlas Project is to try to seek out some of these rare species, find out where they're still on the landscape, and then glean some information from those surveys, find out what plants they're using and what the nearby and surrounding habitats are, so that we can try to encourage people to recreate that habitat, you know, on the landscape as restoration occurs.
Xerces is just one of several partners, and this is Oregon, Washington, Idaho. Who are some of the other people involved, and where did the original spark come from?
Yeah, thanks for that question. It's important to recognize our partners. We've partnered with the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and Oregon State University. And this idea really spurned, you know, every state in the country has to have a state wildlife action plan. And in the last update, which happened, well, sometime within the last 3 or 4 years, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho added bumblebees to their state wildlife action plan. There's what are called species of greatest conservation need. And so Morrison's bumblebee, the western bumblebee, and the Suckley cuckoo bumblebee are species of conservation need in all three of those states. And so that's really, at that point, we launched this idea of trying to do an Atlas Project and, you know, importantly, really try to encourage the use of citizen science to do it, just because it's really hard, despite, you know, these agencies or groups working on this issue. If we were going to collect this data ourselves, it would take, you know, a decade to spread out across all of these states. But if we can train citizen scientists to go out and collect some of this information for us, we can get a really clear snapshot in a short period of time, allowing us to really help know what the current picture is and how to improve that.
Let me go back and say that slowly. The Suckley's cuckoo bumblebee. There are a couple different cuckoo bumblebees. Why are they called that?
Well, they're cuckoo bumblebees in the same way that we have cuckoo birds, right? So cuckoo birds basically go to a nest of another species of bird, and they kick the eggs out and they lay their own eggs, allowing that sort of host bird to raise the young. And it's very similar in the bumblebee world. We have a few species of bumblebees that are very late emerging. And instead of finding their own nest, they actually find a nest that's already been established by a different species. And they crawl down into that nest and they kick that queen bumblebee out and basically take over the nest and use the workers that have already been established by that foundress queen to raise her young. And so that's what a cuckoo bumblebee is.
And one of many that are being sought out in the Northwest for the Pacific Northwest Bumblebee Atlas for Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Rich Hatfield is involved with the Xerces Society as Senior Endangered Species Conservation Biologist and Bumblebee Lead. Xerces, obviously one of several agencies he just mentioned about working together on the project. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange. Your questions, your comments about taking part in the creation of a Bumblebee Atlas. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So let's talk about the end user. Who do you want to be able to make use of the Bumblebee Atlas?
I mean, one of the main targets are land managers. So, you know, we're targeting sort of large state and federal land managers like, you know, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Also, you know, larger federal organizations like the BLM and the Forest Service. I mean, ultimately, we want to be able to let them know whether these imperiled species are living on their lands, but then more importantly, how they can use the information we glean to, you know, more appropriately manage lands for these animals. And that might be, you know, planting certain species of flowers in restoration projects. It might be changing how land is actually managed, whether that be, you know, eradicating invasive plant species or using pesticides of any sort. All of those issues are really going to come out of this Atlas project through some of the research we're going to do and some of the data that our citizen scientists are collecting. And that'll allow us, you know, one of the major products that'll come from this Atlas project is a set of management guidelines that we can then hand off to land managers in the Northwest.
Is it likely to be on forest lands too? I ask that simply because I know there's so many other strictures that forest managers have to stick to at this point.
Yeah, definitely on forest lands. We know that especially a lot of forest habitats seem to be really important for nesting and also for overwintering of bumblebees.
And so, Rich Hatfield, what kinds of skills are you seeking? And it is citizen science, so people don't have to be scientists per se, but they have to be able to assist scientists. So what kinds of skills do they need, and what kind of training do you give?
Yeah, we've been doing a series of trainings across the Northwest. At this point, I think we've done 7 of these trainings. And really, anybody can get involved. You know, the most important thing that people would be able to do is to catch a bumblebee in a net and then to actually take photographs of that bumblebee. So really, anybody that has a basic interest and an enthusiasm for plants and pollinators could participate. We have one more live training actually in La Grande, Oregon, in a couple of weeks. But there, we have all of our training materials are actually available on the website, which is pnwbumblebeeatlas.org, where people can actually watch the training material there and learn how to participate.
All right, and we do have a link to that from our blurb about this at jeffexchange.org. It's so that the skills and training are essentially provided. How much time and dedication beyond just the skill levels?
Yeah, it's not a small ask. I'll be honest with you about that. We're asking folks to go out, you know, somewhere. What we've done is we've divided the states up into 50-kilometer by 50-kilometer grid cells, and we're asking folks to travel out into one of those grid cells and do a timed sample for bumblebees out there, collecting all the bumblebees they see and documenting them, but then also collecting some information about the habitat. So just, you know, making some observations about how many plant species are in bloom and other features that they notice while they're doing their surveys. So, you know, all in all, we're asking folks probably to spend, 8 hours in the field doing one of these surveys, and that includes travel time to and from their site if they have to travel. So it's not a small ask, you know, but the amount that they're contributing to a real conservation science project is significant and obviously hugely valued and appreciated.
You mentioned that the issue tends to be that we know where the bumblebees are, where the people are with the population density. So people are going to be asked to go out to some fairly remote areas, it sounds like. And boy, that is not a small grid. 50 kilometers is 31 miles each direction, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, and we're not. They don't. People don't have to sample everywhere within that 50-kilometer grid cell. We're just asking people to choose either two locations, two different locations on the same day, or the same location separated by time. So, they don't have to cover the whole grid. That would be a large ask. Yeah. Actually, individual samples or survey points are just 1 hectare within there. And so, obviously, you know, that's an imperfect sampling of a large grid cell. But thanks for clarifying that.
Are there some, there are bound to be some surprises along the way. I mean, I assume you're going to go where flowers tend to grow and look for bumblebees starting in a place like that. But I imagine there could be some real surprises about behavior and habitat requirements.
Yeah. I mean, we're already starting to collect a bunch of different observations of some of these species of greatest conservation need, including a number of observations of Morrison's bumblebee close to Bend, Oregon. And there previously had been no observations of that species that I was aware of, at least in central Oregon. And so, you know, some really cool things are coming in, and we're learning a lot.
Just a couple seconds left here, Rich. Are you getting a fair amount of turnout so far? Are people showing up enthusiastic or contacting you about wanting to get involved in the Bumblebee Atlas?
Yeah, I think generally we've had really great response to this. We're super pleased and happy with where we are. Unfortunately, what has happened is the grid cells that have been adopted are the ones that are close to those urban centers. So we do need folks to, you know, take a look at our map on our website, pnwbumblebeeatlas.org, and, you know, plan a bumblebee watching adventure. Go on a road trip with your family and do some bumblebee surveys along the way and contribute to science. And one of the cool things that comes from that is then, you know, a family can learn to become a wildlife watcher in their backyard once they get home, too. It's really fun to look at the species you can find just even there in your backyard in a garden.
Okay, so instead of adopt a highway, it's an adopt a grid cell, 50 kilometers by 50 kilometers, with some training as well provided, all at the site for the Pacific Northwest Bumblebee Atlas, again, that is online and linked through our website at jeffexchange.org. The Bumblebee Atlas, the product of several different organizations and agencies, including the Xerces Society for invertebrate conservation, rather, where Rich Hatfield is the senior endangered species conservation biologist and the bumblebee lead. Rich, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thanks so much for having me and for spending time on this important subject.